Hey there, freedom seekers and guardians of the groove. It's your bass maestro, Horus Morris, coming at you from the heart of the Merkel Treehouse at Orange Pill Retreat. It's Friday, April 26th, 2024, and let's take a moment to ponder a fundamental truth of our existence. Privacy is the cornerstone of individuality. Without the sanctuary of privacy, we cannot truly be free to express ourselves, to explore our deepest thoughts and desires, to chart our own course in this vast cosmic ocean. Imagine a world where every moment of your life is laid bare for all to see, where there are no secrets, no sacred spaces to call your own. It's a world devoid of autonomy, where conformity reigns supreme, and the essence of what makes you unique is lost in the collective noise. Privacy, my friends, is not just about keeping secrets. It's about safeguarding the very essence of who we are as individuals. It's about preserving our right to carve out our own path, to make our own choices, to define our own destiny. In a world where our every move is tracked, monitored, and scrutinized, privacy becomes a precious commodity, a shield against the prying eyes of those who seek to control and manipulate us. It's the key that unlocks the door to our inner sanctum, allowing us to explore the depths of our souls without fear or judgment. So let's cherish our right to privacy. Let's defend it fiercely against those who would seek to erode it. For in the sanctuary of privacy, we find the freedom to be ourselves, to dance to the beat of our own drum, and to live our lives on our own terms. And now, direct from the Merkel Treehouse at Orange Pill Retreat, right next door to Oklahoma's largest pecan tree, give it up for the dreamer of realities to come. That groovy chick who keeps the vibe alive, the incredible, the remarkable, Ms. Audrey Merkel.
Thank you, Horace. And good day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Merkel Treehouse. We've got the conclusion of Pinto Pete's block size war coming up, but first, big news in the war on privacy. On Wednesday, the founders and CEO of Samurai Wallet found themselves in hot water, arrested and slapped with charges of money laundering and unlicensed money transmitting offenses. Award-winning journalist and presidential candidate, Morten Enger, joins us in the studio to offer his insights on current affairs. Morten, how's it going?
Great, Audrey.
And you brought Vinny with you?
That's right, Audrey. As Mort's campaign manager, I need to be at his side every moment of the day, so I'm available to advise him.
Are you certain about that? I mean, he still has to fulfill his duties for the Treehouse. We're committed to delivering the pinnacle of Bitcoin insight, but this presidential campaign might be throwing a wrench into the works.
I understand, Audrey. However, this is a crucial time in the campaign. November will be here before you know it. But I promise Vinny will not disrupt anything.
Then tell me, Mort, what the heck is going on with this attack on privacy we're seeing with the Samurai indictments?
My fellow Americans, today, I come before you with a fire raging in my heart and a righteous anger coursing through my veins. The recent actions of the Department of Justice have once again reminded us of the relentless assault on our freedoms, the erosion of our privacy, and the tyranny of overreaching regulatory agencies.
Whoa, Mort. Tone it down a little.
Anyway, the indictment against the operators of Samurai Wallet is not just an attack on a few individuals. It's an attack on every single one of us who values privacy, autonomy, and the right to financial freedom. It's a slap in the face to the principles of self-sovereignty and individual liberty that this great nation was built upon. Let's dissect the absurdity of this indictment together, shall we? The government itself admits that only a measly 5% of activity in Samurai Whirlpool was illicit. So why, I ask you, are they penalizing the law-abiding 95%? Why are they casting a wide net of suspicion and condemnation over all users of Samurai, simply because a small fraction may have engaged in illicit activities? They should be doing their jobs and investigating the criminals. Find out who they are and leave the little guy alone.
Morten, maybe moderate your language a bit.
Listen up, folks. Let me lay it out plain and simple. Samurai never held on to user funds, never called the shots with user funds, and most importantly, never once made transactions on behalf of their users. It's a purely self-custodial wallet, through and through. From the get-go, they stood firm on this principle, with every single feature they rolled out. And let me make this crystal clear. The Samurai team did nothing but write code, exercising their First Amendment-protected right to freedom of speech. The truth is that many Bitcoin users turn to Samurai precisely to keep their funds private on the Bitcoin public ledger. It's a tool of empowerment for those who seek to reclaim control over their financial lives in the face of intrusive surveillance and government overreach. And yet, instead of celebrating innovation and technological advancement, the powers that be have chosen to demonize and persecute those who dare to challenge their authority. But fear not, my fellow Americans, for the winds of change are blowing. As your future president, I promise to purge our regulatory agencies of these criminals who masquerade as public servants.
Geez, Mort. Please watch what you say about...
Vinny, why do you keep interrupting my speech?
It's supposed to be an editorial, not a speech.
It is an editorial. Just let me finish. Is that okay with you, Vinny?
I mean, you're throwing out a lot of red meat here, but go right ahead.
Ladies and gentlemen, I will restore integrity, accountability, and respect for individual rights to every corner of our government. Together, we will reclaim our privacy, our autonomy, and our freedom. Together, we will build a future where innovation is celebrated, where individual rights are cherished, and where the spirit of liberty burns bright in the hearts of all Americans. So join me in this fight, my friends. Visit ISupportMort.com to learn more about my campaign and join the movement to restore liberty and justice for all. Thank you, and may freedom prevail.
This has been a message from the Anger for America Campaign Committee.
Thanks, gentlemen. Let's talk later about, boundaries, okay? Folks, these indictments aren't merely an assault on Bitcoin enthusiasts. It's the inevitable march toward a government seeking complete control. Just a few months ago, I stumbled upon stories of coin dealers facing sudden account closures by their banks. The ruling elite aimed to establish choke points, coercing everyone into fiat channels, enabling CBDC surveillance and inflating the money supply to manipulate the populace. Pay attention, folks. They are watching us, so we need to watch back. And now, what you have all been waiting for. The conclusion of Pinto Pete's block size war.
Chapter 14, Victory.
By November of 2017, Amaury Sechet's hard fork notion, bringing forth Bitcoin Cash, well, it had caught fire among them large blockers. It was like a wildfire sweeping through the plains, gathering momentum with every gust of wind. Then, just a whisker away from the SegWit 2X launch, an email came a-riding into town. Mike Belshi, along with the other big shots in the SegWit 2X camp, they penned an email and sent it off to the SegWit 2X mailing list. That email, well, it was like a flag of surrender unfurling in the breeze.
Our goal has always been a smooth upgrade for Bitcoin. Although we strongly believe in the need for a larger block size, there is something we believe is even more important: keeping the community together. As fees rise on the blockchain, we believe it will eventually become obvious that on-chain capacity increases are necessary. When that happens, we hope the community will come together and find a solution, possibly with a block size increase. Until then, we are suspending our plans for the upcoming 2 MB upgrade. Signed, Mike Belshi, Wences Casares, Jihan Wu, Jeff Garzik, Peter Smith, and Eric Voorhees. November 8, 2017, SegWit 2X mailing list.
As the news of SegWit 2X's demise reverberated, Bitcoin Cash found itself soaring in value, emerging as the final stronghold for the large blockers. By November 11th, it had even eclipsed Ethereum, the leading shitcoin, in market capitalization. In response to these dramatic shifts, Ethereum's co-founder directed an open message to Roger Ver, Jihan Wu, and Amaury Sechet.
Congrats on this. Seriously. Twitter post, November 11th, 2017. Vitalik Buterin, Ethereum co-founder.
On November 12th, Bitcoin Cash embarked on a historic rally. Just days prior, its value had hovered around a mere 8% of Bitcoin's price. However, Following Mike's email, the currency experienced a meteoric rise, reaching an astonishing peak of approximately 48% of Bitcoin's value.
Well, let me take you down memory lane a bit. Now, what made this fork downright peculiar was that both coins, Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, shared a history. So whatever coins you had on Bitcoin, you automatically got the same amount on Bitcoin Cash. They called it an airdrop. Now, I'll tell you, I wasted no time. I sold off them Bitcoin Cash for Bitcoin quicker than a jackrabbit in a dust storm. I didn't want no part of a Bitcoin that was being cheered on by the likes of Roger Ver, Jihan Wu, Craig Faketoshi Wright, and all them other snake oil salesmen. Seemed like this new Bitcoin Cash was drawing all the knuckleheads out of Bitcoin, and that, my friend, was a silver lining. But, let me tell you, as Bitcoin Cash was reaching its peak, I had a few nail-biting moments pondering the possibility that the small blockers might lose this tussle by the only scorecard that counts, the markets. While the miners, especially Roger Ver and Jihan Wu, were spamming the Bitcoin network to jack up them fees, they were out there squawking to the masses that Bitcoin was too darn pricey to use. And let me tell you, their smear campaign against Bitcoin, well, it was mighty effective. Additionally, before a fix was rushed out, Bitcoin Cash found itself disrupting both chains. See, they had this fancy difficulty adjustment mechanism that was supposed to be a solution, but it ended up being more of a gimmick. Miners were hopping back and forth between Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash, chasing after whichever chain promised the most profit at the time. And you know what that caused? Block delays for both of them, plain and simple.
As the Bitcoin Cash rally surged, it was attributed to retail investors from South Korea, whose enthusiasm for cryptocurrency markets was unparalleled during this period. Yet, just as swiftly as it rose, the rally dwindled precipitously. Meanwhile, Jeff Garzik's BTC1 client, armed with SegWit and a block size increase to 2 megabytes, stood poised to replace the Bitcoin blockchain on November 15th. However, when the anticipated day arrived, a series of critical bugs plagued the BTC1 client. Scheduled for activation at block height 494,784, the BTC1 clients unexpectedly stalled two blocks early. Implementation errors resulted in the premature activation of some hard fork aspects.
Well, let me tell you, the BTC1 client turned out to be a downright embarrassment, especially for poor old Jeff Garzik. It was plagued with bugs, so critical that it made mining on the SegWit2x chain impossible. At first, Jeff was denying any problems, but eventually he had to come clean and admit to the mess. Problem was, by then the damage was done. The consequences? Well, they were dire. The SegWit2x chain never even got off the ground. Not a single block ever saw the light of day on that chain.
Roger Ver joined Jihan Wu, the driving force behind Bitmain. Together, they embarked on an ambitious campaign, pouring millions into conferences, marketing initiatives, and merchant adoption drives, all in the name of promoting Bitcoin Cash. However, despite their relentless efforts, Bitcoin Cash struggled to carve out a significant foothold in the market. Over time, it became evident that Bitcoin Cash failed to match the performance of its predecessor, Bitcoin, both in terms of price appreciation and on-chain transaction volume. This disparity was particularly striking considering Bitcoin Cash's purported aim to facilitate higher throughput through larger blocks. Furthermore, revelations surfaced indicating that Bitcoin Cash's on-chain transaction volume fell short, even when compared to Bitcoin's SegWit transactions, a stark blow to the narrative championing the superiority of larger blocks. For Jihan Wu and Bitmain, the journey was riddled with financial setbacks. The company's substantial investment, exceeding $800 million, into Bitcoin Cash resulted in heavy losses, significantly impacting its financial standing. Jihan found himself grappling with the consequences of misguided investments and strategic missteps.
Roger Ver and Jihan Wu were feeling the heat, big time. Roger had been hollering about a flippening where Bitcoin Cash would supposedly strut past Bitcoin in value, but that dream fizzled out faster than a damp firecracker. Day by day, the financial squeeze tightened around them as the price of Bitcoin Cash took a nosedive. Rumor has it there were some mighty tense phone calls between Jihan and Roger, Merkle Treehouse players have set the scene to reenact one of these alleged calls.
Hello?
Roger, it's me, Jihan.
Hey there, Jihan. How's it going, man?
You know fucking damn well how it's going. I'm pouring in millions and millions of fucking dollar into fucking Bitcoin Cash to keep it fucking propped up.
Calm down, Jihan. I'm bleeding out too. Have patience. Core will crumble and we'll be stinking rich.
You promised flippening, Roger. When flippening?
Well, I'll tell you, folks, that scene we just heard, pure fiction. But I reckon it's mighty close to what them conversations between Roger and Jihan might have sounded like.
As internal divisions among large blockers deepened, the once unified front crumbled, leaving behind a legacy of shattered expectations and fiscal misfortune. The block-size war, once fueled by ideological fervor, had ultimately unraveled into a cautionary tale of ambition, gone awry, and the perils of overzealous investment.
Then old Craig Faketoshi Wright stuck his big head back into the story. That fella wanted to crank up that block size limit even faster than most of the Bitcoin Cash crowd wanted. He kept spouting off the same old narrative points the large blockers used against the small blockers a while back. Come November 15, 2018, Bitcoin Cash split right down the middle. One part stuck with Bitcoin Cash, while the other followed Craig's vision, dubbed Bitcoin Satoshi's vision. The value of Bitcoin Cash took a hit compared to Bitcoin, and it kept on sliding. Just like the small blockers predicted, some of the large blockers started seeing the wisdom in sticking to the original rules when things get hairy. Stray from that, and you're asking for trouble. The risk? Your coin starts forking, splintering into smaller and smaller communities. Them large blockers? They were learning that lesson the hard way.
The skirmish between Bitcoin Cash and Bitcoin Satoshi's vision reached its zenith. When Craig Wright threatened a new war, Roger Ver took to his vlog to share his thoughts.
It's never easy to admit that you've been fooled. Maybe I've been fooled. And one thing that I guess I have learned too, a little bit here, the core people previously were really, really, really opposed to any sort of a contentious hard fork. And I think there's some merit to being afraid of that, because we're seeing right now the damage that can be caused by having contentious hard fork.
Well, now, the tale of the block size war is all about how them small blockers spun themselves one heck of a yarn, one that folks found mighty compelling. See, they painted a picture of a whole new kind of money where the users call the shots. And let me tell you, that tale had folks hooked. It was like a breath of fresh air compared to the big blockers' pitch for a high-capacity, low-fee global payment system. And what did small blockers get for their storytelling prowess? Well, they snagged themselves a victory, plain and simple. Over 2 years of tug-of-war, the small blockers and users managed to outmaneuver the miners and big businesses in the space. And despite the big blockers throwing literal boatloads of cash into the mix, the small blockers came out on top, loud and clear. Bitcoin showed its true colors, proving it could be the user-controlled money it was always meant to be. Now here's the kicker. Ain't no guarantee this user-controlled money vibe's gonna stick around forever. The block size war might have bought Bitcoin a bit more time, but it's just a taste of the battles ahead. The big shots behind our centrally controlled fiat monetary systems have caught wind of the potential of user-driven money, and let's just say they're not too pleased about it. I reckon there's plenty more battles on the horizon, so we must be vigilant. But for the time being, that dream of a world where regular folks call the shots and have a direct say in the rules that govern their money, well, that dream's still alive and kicking.
Oh boy, what a ride. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Pinto Pete to the Merkle Treehouse Studios at Orange Pill Retreat. How are you, Pinto?
I'm doing real fine, Audrey. The new studios are great. I was thinking of tossing a line in the Blue River after this.
You are certainly welcome to. I must say, your account of the block size war was absolutely riveting. Is there anything you wish you had done differently?
All in all, mighty pleased with how it all turned out. Them Merkel Treehouse players sure know how to put on a reenactment. Barbie, our production assistant, she's just a peach to work with, cute as a button, too. And Horace, well, he sure did a bang-up job as our narrator.
I had a groovy time, Pinto.
I reckon I could have covered more ground. And it was challenging in an audio-only format. Aside from my own recollections and research, I leaned quite heavily on The Block Size War by Jonathan Beer. If you're hankering for the whole tale, give that book a gander.
I'll make sure a link gets into the show notes. What's next for The Block Size War?
We'll gussy it up nice and polished, tweak it and fix a few missteps, then let folks know they've got a good old tale to listen to around the campfire in its full glory. All 14 chapters.
You have any parting words for the audience?
Yep, this whole runes deal, it's like a rerun of the spam attacks we saw back in the Block Size War days. These folks cluttering up the mempool with their antics, it's downright disgraceful. They slap their shitcoins on Bitcoin like it's some kind of playground. Big blockers used to claim this would jazz up Bitcoin, but look where it got 'em. If it was such a boon, why didn't it work out for Bitcoin Cash or Bitcoin SV? Seems to me the small blockers had it right all along. These ordinals and runes, they're just passing fancies, not the real deal. Bet they'll learn a lesson or two soon enough.
Thank you, Pinto. Congratulations on the show. And now, Eli and Polly are eager to have the final say on today's episode. Take it away, kiddos.
Hello, Miss Merkel. In light of the draconian indictments against the samurai founders, we will forego our usual music and audience of children. We wanted to do something special for the Merkel Treehouse audience. A Cypherpunk's Manifesto was a treatise written in 1993. My brother Eli will read it to you in its entirety.
A Cypherpunk's Manifesto by Eric Hughes. Privacy is necessary for an open society in the electronic age. Privacy is not secrecy. A private matter is something one doesn't want the whole world to know, but a secret matter is something one doesn't want anybody to know. Privacy is the power to selectively reveal oneself to the world. If two parties have some sort of dealings, then each has a memory of their interaction. Each party can speak about their own memory of this. How could anyone prevent it? One could pass laws against it, but the freedom of speech, even more than privacy, is fundamental to an open society. We seek not to restrict any speech at all. If many parties speak together in the same forum, each can speak to all the others, and aggregate together knowledge about individuals and other parties. The power of electronic communications has enabled such group speech, and it will not go away merely because we might want it to. Since we desire privacy, we must ensure that each party to a transaction have knowledge only of that which is directly necessary for that transaction. Since any information can be spoken of, we must ensure that we reveal as little as possible. In most cases, personal identity is not salient. When I purchase a magazine at a store and hand cash to the clerk, there is no need to know who I am. When I ask my electronic mail provider to send and receive messages, my provider need not know to whom I am speaking, or what I am saying, or what others are saying to me. My provider only need know how to get the message there, and how much I owe them in fees. When my identity is revealed by the underlying mechanism of the transaction, I have no privacy. I cannot here selectively reveal myself. I must always reveal myself. Therefore, privacy in an open society requires anonymous transaction systems. Until now, cash has been the primary such system. An anonymous transaction system is not a secret transaction system. An anonymous system empowers individuals to reveal their identity when desired, and only when desired. This is the essence of privacy. Privacy in an open society also requires cryptography. If I say something, I want it heard only by those for whom I intend it. If the content of my speech is available to the world, I have no privacy. To encrypt is to indicate the desire for privacy, and to encrypt with weak cryptography is to indicate not too much desire for privacy. Furthermore, to reveal one's identity with assurance, when the default is anonymity, requires the cryptographic signature. We cannot expect governments, corporations, or other large faceless organizations to grant us privacy out of their beneficence. It is to their advantage to speak of us, and we should expect that they will speak. To try to prevent their speech is to fight against the realities of information. Information does not just want to be free, it longs to be free. Information expands to fill the available storage space. Information is rumor's younger, stronger cousin. Information is fleeter of foot, has more eyes, knows more, and understands less than rumor. We must defend our own privacy if we expect to have any. We must come together and create systems which allow anonymous transactions to take place. People have been defending their own privacy for centuries, with whispers, darkness, envelopes, closed doors, secret handshakes, and couriers. The technologies of the past did not allow for strong privacy, but electronic technologies do. We the cypherpunks are dedicated to building anonymous systems. We are defending our privacy with cryptography, with anonymous mail forwarding systems, with digital signatures, and with electronic money. Cypherpunks write code. We know that someone has to write software to defend privacy, and since we can't get privacy unless we all do, we're going to write it. We publish our code so that our fellow cypherpunks may practice and play with it. Our code is free for all to use, worldwide. We don't much care if you don't approve of the software we write. We know that software can't be destroyed, and that a widely dispersed system can't be shut down. Cypherpunks deplore regulations on cryptography, for encryption is fundamentally a private act. The act of encryption, in fact, removes information from the public realm. Even laws against cryptography reach only so far as a nation's border and the arm of its violence. Cryptography will ineluctably spread over the whole globe, and with it the anonymous transaction systems that it makes possible. For privacy to be widespread, it must be part of a social contract. People must come in together, deploy these systems for the common good. Privacy only extends so far as the cooperation of one's fellows in society. We the cypherpunks seek your questions and your concerns and hope we may engage you so that we do not deceive ourselves. We will not, however, be moved out of our course because some may disagree with our goals. The cypherpunks are actively engaged in making the network safer for privacy. Let us proceed together apace. Onward.
And that's the lesson for the day.
Thank you, kiddos. If you can't grasp what's at stake after that, then there's little hope of saving you from the conformity being thrust upon you. And with that, episode 84 of the Merkle Treehouse comes to a close. Thanks for joining us today at the Merkle Treehouse Studios. Special thanks to the fine folks at Orange Pill Retreat. Follow them at OP Retreat 21 on X for more information about their project. Please join us next week for the absolute best in Bitcoin mindshare. In the meantime, keep your money hard, your heart soft, and have a little fun sometimes. Put a pretty pink bow on this one, fellas.
Yeah, kind of nervous here. Sorry, this is Dr. Luther Finch, and if you don't mind, well, you know, spread the, you know, word about the Merkle treehouse, and well, I guess, thank you.